Welcome to the Catholic Sphere. I'm Doug Keck. You know, each week we bring you an insightful discussion on the latest issues facing the Catholic Church and the culture we live in from a theological perspective. Today we're asking the question, is feminism the new pagan megachurch? Here to answer that question, we have a great panel led off by a fellow in the Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Jennifer Bryson, new to the program. She joins us from Nebraska. We also have our regular, that's EW10's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan. He's in our theology studio. And finally, joining us again, we have a philosopher, mother, and author of Something Wicked, Why Feminism Can't Be Fused with Christianity, Carrie Gress. She joins us once again from Virginia. Welcome, panel. Thank you for making the time for this very important topic and program. So let me start off, because we'll play off that title of that whole megachurch thing and the idea of some sort of shadow church. And I'll go to you, Carrie. What do you mean by that when we talk about that in light of feminism and Christianity? What's the problem?
Yeah, well, I think the problem is that feminism has actually set itself up to function as a shadow church, that it actually has an object of worship, a sort of idol, which is female autonomy. It's got its own commandments. It's got its own theological virtues. It has a sacrament. It even has its own way of evangelizing. And I didn't realize this initially, and it was one of these things where I kept looking at the pieces that you see sort of intrinsic to the movement over about 200 years. And that's when it finally jumped out at me that this is really mimicking what it is that the church does. And I think this is one of the reasons, first of all, why feminism has been so absorbed by women, because it offers us a way to think, feel, act, and, you know how to function in the world, but also what makes it so difficult to get out of, because of course we're not in it. You're not really worshiping the real God. It really comes back to something like the worship of self and, all the pieces that go into that. So that was, I think, the realization that I've made that has, I think, helped people really see the difference between what feminism is doing and what the church is doing and why they're not compatible.
Okay. Jennifer, in your case, you look back at some of the early roots of feminism and had some concerns. What are some of those concerns in the early roots of feminism?
Sure. I think in the earliest stages, I see this already in the late 1700s, early 1800s, and right into the mid-1800s, by those who consider themselves followers of the earliest feminists, is that autonomy is an absolutely central principle. Mm-hmm. And pursuing autonomy of the self becomes a new worldview, a replacement of a person's role in relationship to God. And then this is also linked to other Enlightenment and post-Enlightenment ideas that shaped the foundations, such as a belief in an inherent progress rather than a history that has the liveliness of our interaction with God's grace. Those are just two examples.
Mm-hmm. Now, Colin, thinking in terms of Edith Stein and the idea you have with somebody who there is obviously a saint now, but started off as a radical feminist, what did she see? What were her insights?
Well, her insights didn't come first from the faith. They came first from her philosophical studies, the same philosophical studies that Dietrich von Hildebrand would undertake about a decade later, which Pope John Paul II, as Father Carol Wojtyła in the 50s, would look at as a way of understanding the human person. And so by that, she began to see that what feminism was really an empty shell. And then she had her encounter with the faith when she picked up Teresa of Avila's life story in the library of a Protestant colleague of all. And she read that and she said, this is truth. And that started her on a journey of trying to put together a philosophical and a Catholic understanding of woman. And so in her writing, she proposes that. She never abandons the idea that women, and when they work in positions in society and that, should be considered on an equal level, sort of an economic perspective on it. Mm-hmm. But on the moral, the philosophical, and the theological, she clearly aligned herself both with the personalist insights of her day, and these fit in well later in John Paul II's time and writings.
Now, so Carrie, what's wrong with the idea of women asserting their autonomy, you know, let's say coming out of a culture that one would describe as patriarchy, at least some feminists mm-hmm. would, in the sense of women having their lives controlled, not having the ability to get out of a situation because they had no way to earn income, et cetera.
Right. Well, I think we have to make a distinction between what it is that the feminism was really trying to do. I think we can all look around and see that there were things that needed to be changed throughout history, and we could have changed those on, you know, a local policy kind of effort. But what feminism was and still is this effort to really rewire men and women. And, you know, it starts in the very beginning, this condemnation of patriarchy, of hierarchy, of any kind of even military or church hierarchy, mm-hmm. and this effort to collapse that into egalitarianism. But simultaneously, while that collapsing of the masculine gifts is happening, you also see women really being encouraged to mimic the roles and behavior of men, mm-hmm. and not good men. You know, promiscuity is promoted, mm-hmm. and again, this idea of living a life without husbands, children, or even home. And then, of course, we see the full fruition of this with the trans movement, where women are even mm-hmm. not just at war with their own fertility, which happens with the pill and, of course, abortion, but fully with this idea of, you know, packing off healthy body parts in order for women to sort of fit into this feminist model. So right. I think that's really what we have to look at, is right. separating out what things are authentically good for women and have been good for women, and what things have actually distorted women and been incredibly damaging to the culture, broadly speaking.
Now, Jennifer, you talk about the idea that feminists were convinced that feminism would work because of its reasonableness. So there are aspects, as Carrie just mentioned, that are very reasonable. How do you push back against the radical side, or even the side that you think goes too far or takes the wrong perspective, without, you know, working against that reasonableness?
Sure. So this is an idea that Carrie articulates very well in her book, Something mm-hmm. Wicked, and that this isolation of reason and over emphasis on reason from an Enlightenment worldview shapes feminism in a way that detaches the world from anything metaphysical. And thus, the only tool in the toolbox is human reason. So, for example, the tool in the toolbox of theology is taken out and removed. And as Carrie said, there are ways to fix problems. They can be done locally in policy. And I feel strongly that within our Catholic tradition, mm-hmm. we have tremendous resources to address injustices mm-hmm. where there are injustices. And we don't need an entirely new worldview of feminism that is changing the concept of what a woman is by trying to use human reason alone mm-hmm. without the greater order that we have within the cosmic order by mm-hmm. connecting to theology and metaphysics.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think, let me ask you to follow up on that, Jennifer, what about younger women? Are they as connected to that kind of feminism, at least the part that we kind of saw really break out in the 60s and the 70s, or is it different?
Many young women are seeing and unfortunately personally experiencing the suffering mm-hmm. of this push for autonomy. And we see this already in the late 1700s, early 1800s, that we saw, for example, in the late 1960s, that the push for women's autonomy requires a detachment of woman from her role in motherliness, which may involve being a mother in a family. It detaches woman from family. That the empowerment of women is sought in a very masculine sense often, mm-hmm. And requires an alienation of woman even from her own body. And younger women today, as I said, many that I talk to, they see this, and they see older women who pursued feminism when they were younger, who are now in their 50s and 60s, where career maybe is not as central as it was, mm-hmm. and there's so many isolated women alone, and they look at that and they think, I'm not sure that that's a wholesome future. Whereas they, fortunately, because role models we have, they see the beauty and love in family.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, Colin, one of our great friends, Alice von Hildebrand, who used to teach here for a period of time and somebody we loved and got to know, you know, in her case, you know, she did a series when I first came here on feminism versus femininity, so to speak. And now, in her case, she thought that women were superior to men. But why don't you talk about her perspective?
Well, you know, I think she's right. We're on sort of the lead of the end, perhaps, of a whole arc of history that goes, from Eve at the beginning to the woman clothed with the sun, Mary, at the end. And in between, you see this fight, which has been described by Carrie and Jennifer, you know, this reduction of the human to the merely material or to how I reason about it. And people have gotten closed in on themselves. Alice, like her husband in his writings, her husband Dietrich in his writings, and like Pope John Paul II, deeply understood that you can only reason about woman or human nature generally if you're actually looking at that question. Most people today simply look at it as their nature. Mm-hmm. And this is an autonomy which is beyond feminism, the whole sense that we are, as Pope John Paul II described in his encyclical on the Holy Spirit, the original temptation was, you shall be as gods, determining what is good and evil. And our contemporaries have really taken that in the good sense that it was portrayed by the evil one. Mm-hmm. And that is, this is a good thing, let's do it. And so all reasoning has been on that level. In the case of what Alice said, she put the emphasis on the supernatural. Mm-hmm. And that is, we are not simply natural creatures, but we are supernatural creatures destined by God, and that God is calling us to live the fullness of a nature that He gave us. And it's our task to sort of determine what is the purpose and the end of that nature. Mm-hmm. And for the woman, for her, that was clear. And she talks about the beautiful notion of femininity, mm-hmm. That women should manifest this femininity, this openness which receives others and gives them care. All the things which we have generally thought applied to women and professions which women go into in great numbers, the healthcare professions and so on. So she looked at it in that way and really captured what is, I think, the antidote to both incorporating modern insights into human relations on one level, mm-hmm. but always balancing them with the truth that we learn from the natures of things, the metaphysics that's already been mentioned, or the ontology that's already been mentioned, and then ultimately looking to the truth of the scriptures and the teachings of the church to put all of that together in a true and complete understanding of the human person and man and woman in that context.
Right. Carrie, going back to the kind of autonomous idea, you see that impacting the whole issue of motherhood and abortion. Explain.
Yeah. Well, I think because autonomy and this idea of working in order to have our autonomy as women, what we've seen is that feminism is really the engine of abortion. And I think once we figure this out, the pro-life movement is going to really have an incredible push behind it, because we've sort of been ignoring it and trying to use the symptoms instead of really what the root of the problem is. Because abortion is what allows women to be able to work and to focus on this autonomy, to not have to raise children. And yet, of course, we know this is having, you know, incredibly tragic results, obviously in the death of 3,000 children daily in the United States, but also the birth dearth that we're now heading into worldwide. That's a huge problem that no one really knows how to fix. And then, of course, the bigger issue is just even on the fundamental level. We've gotten to a place where women are losing their capacity to feel empathy towards their own children. So what we've removed from women for the sake of so-called rationality and reason is the heart of woman and the real, you know, the essence of woman, which is this idea that Alice von Hildebrand spoke of so beautifully, this idea of motherhood. And I don't mean that just biologically, but also spiritually. And I think the church has these incredible resources because we have so many saints and scholars. We have the whole religious system where women are called, you know, that the abbess is called mother. We really understand that the role of motherhood and that motherhood is meant to be life-giving. It's meant to be nurturing. It's meant to really help people reach the potential that God has given them. And so I think that's the part that's missing, because we've become so focused on our own potential. We've really missed what's around us. And of course, this has also had dramatic effects on our relationships, you know, the war of the sexes, and taken away so many of the gifts, or squashed the gifts that men have and want to be able to bring to their family. And yet women are told over and over again that we have to do it all. And I think that's led to a lot of incredibly unhappy women and men.
Right. Well, is that why we haven't even the dearth of marriages, let alone relationships we have, especially with younger people today? Right, impacting relationships because of that kind of perspective.
Yeah, no, undoubtedly. And I think this, you know, if you look back to where this started, the souring of relationships happened, it really happened in the 60s and 70s when there was this promotion of the idea that women needed to be promiscuous in order to be happy. And of course, that's one of the three commandments of feminism, in addition to engaging in the occult and contempt for men. There's all this idea of promiscuity, and that's really where we see the competition happening between men and women. Obviously, that happens in the work level as well, but you see it much more intimately in marriages, where women and men feel like they have to compete. You know, these endless debates over who's going to load the dishwasher, who's going to take care of the garbage, you know, all of those kinds of things. And what's really lost in that is the incredible beauty of complementarity, but also really understanding and treasuring the preciousness of the other, of women being able to understand the depth and the beauty of the gifts that men have that are different than our gifts as women. So I think that's where so much of the terrible dating scene comes from. And, you know, and also by identifying that, we can also start getting back to something more beautiful. We can, you know, get back into even the idea of rom-coms. I think that's a genre that's died because dating has gotten so bad.
Right. So, Jennifer, let me ask you, in the idea of we're dealing, you know, we say there seems like a fair amount of people who might say, well, I'm not into radical feminism, but there is a form of feminism, a moderate feminism. Is that workable, or is the whole concept of feminism something that doesn't work for general society, let alone for the Catholic faithful?
Sure. So I see two problems, and sometimes they're separate problems, sometimes they're related, with the idea of a quote-unquote moderate feminism. One is those who want to have some basic premises of feminism of, well, I want to still, you know, have autonomy. I want the most important thing in my life to be my career, but I'm willing to stop at that. That type of feminism is working in the premises that naturally will continue to lead to the more radical forms of the same thing of feminism. A second problem is with those who want to mean something very different from what we know as feminism, but who still insist on using the term feminism. I would say no. We don't need the term feminism. And when they use it to mean something else, and sometimes they'll say, oh, I mean this special kind of feminism here, read my 400-page book on it. Well, that's unreasonable to expect the public at large to all read the 400-page book and understand this completely different meaning attached to the word.
So they miss the nuance. They miss the nuances of what somebody might be saying. Right.
And what happens is they then promote and give a stamp of approval to feminism itself and some idea of feminism.
Right.
I think we've seen so much damage from feminism, and our Catholic tradition offers such tremendous resources to help us understand what a woman is, that it's time to say no, feminism failed, and move on in positive, great ways.
Well, what would you say to somebody who said some of the concerns people have about the church is that it's become overly feminine?
I do think that we need to consider that one of the great harms that I see that's come from feminism has been an overassertion of women in ways that have created imbalance. The word hierarchy itself means order. not always, you know, top bottom. Mm-hmm. And so in an order, let's consider the difference between a bird and me. If a bird were to decide, I'm only going to walk and never fly, because I want to be a being that walks, the bird would die. If I were to decide my only locomotion is going to be flying, I'm never going to walk, well, I'd probably starve to death. And so order puts us in our roles that are what we are made for and that we can flourish in. And if we can recover that, and that's going to include recovering a new understanding of what a man is too, then we can bring back a rebalance in the order. And we see that the church thrives best when women are women and men are men.
So, Carrie, you mentioned earlier in the show even about the kind of the, you know, men being women, women being men, and not being able to define the word woman. We have a Supreme Court justice who refused to acknowledge what the difference was during her confirmation hearing. So it seems like in some ways that's kind of falling apart. Is that a positive step?
You mean in terms of the people, the incapacity to define things?
No, I think in the idea that that now we're starting to see the idea that the tide has turned against that kind of perspective that anybody can, certainly for children, the situation of trans.
Yeah, no, I think what we're seeing is really fascinating because, you know, and I said this several years ago, that I think that the devil has overplayed his hand with the trans movement because it's something that feels so other and odd. And, you know, because it requires so much medical intervention, and even to that point, it doesn't actually do what it says it's going to do. You're still biologically in the depths of your DNA, a woman, even if you think that you are a man. And have had surgeries and testosterone to sort of lead you in that direction. So I think that that's been, you know, an element that we can see this changing tide where people are beginning to say, there's something very wrong about that. And, you know, once you start pulling on that string, then it's easier to start looking deeper and asking deeper questions. What does it mean to be a woman? And I know one of the things that is helpful is even just, you know, as Jennifer mentioned, so many of the women today are actually suffering and are incredibly lonely, anxiety, depression, mental illness. All of these things have come in many respects because of feminism. And so people are beginning to question it and say, maybe this hasn't been the great thing that we thought it was, and we need to reconsider this. So, yeah, I think, I started writing on this issue 10 years ago, and to see where the discussion has gone in the last 10 years and where we're at now, where it's a mainstream conversation instead of just quiet corners in the Catholic world. It's incredibly heartening, and I think there's a lot of momentum moving in the direction where, you know, we just need to get rid of it and stop using it as language and really, you know, get back to authentic language and really understanding being, you know, what it means to be male and female again.
So let's talk about the idea of the new pagan megachurch. Where is that? Is that inside the Catholic Church? Is that just the culture in general? What do we mean by that?
Well, it's everywhere. I mean, I think it's in the heart of women. I think it's actually been aided certainly by, television, influencers, celebrities. We see that the role of the influence upon women there. It's only very, very recently that you actually have role models for women that aren't in lockstep with radical feminists. This, I think, has been one of the positive things of the tradwife movement. You know, as much as there are problems with that, I think what's happening is people are seeing, you know, there's a different way to live as a woman. And I think what Jennifer and I are talking about is saying, how do we get back to something so basic that it can actually stretch through the trends? Because radical feminism has shape-shifted. You know, you've got the 70s sort of masculine woman, then you've got the girl boss, then you've got the, you know, Barbie feminist. I think what we need as Catholics is to understand that we've got to help women and men understand the depth of womanhood and present it in such a way that they understand the beauty and just how compelling and wonderful it is when we're working in union with God and His church and in our families and even in our local communities, in contrast to, you know, what we're seeing with, you know, for example, the the PETA, the girl that works for PETA, but that aborts her own child, kind of that disordered dynamism that we're seeing in the world. So anyway, I think it's deeply saturated in the culture. But again, because the fact that people are in pain or people are beginning to see that this isn't working the way that we expected it to, that we're seeing a real shift. And, you know, I think this is some of what's behind a lot of the conversions into the church. This is why young men in particular are coming into the church, because they're seeing the church as a place where manhood is actually, you know, can be appreciated, despite the fact that we still have pockets that many would argue are deeply feminized. Right. There's still something deeply masculine about the church and the scholarship and the example of the saints over the centuries.
Well, let me ask you, Colin, as we're approaching up on the last 2 minutes, talk about it from the perspective of a man in the sense of reasserting the appropriateness of manhood in relation to women, you know, without turning it into a battle of the sexes.
Well, I think we're in a reaction, really, as was well described by both Carrie and Jennifer, to the way feminism portrayed itself and what women, what their role was and how they were to act as a feminist model in our day. And so men were definitely sidelined, and you feel that. You see that in television. You see that in the movies. It's certainly a feature of the zeitgeist of the culture. I think it's very encouraging, and that the feminist model is being undone before our eyes. It has to do with the gender ideology. It also has to do with this competitiveness, which was fostered for so long, that Carrie was just talking about. You know, and I think going back to something John Paul II said in Evangelium Vitae, when he was describing a culture that was going in the direction of ruin, he said, we need to foster a new feminism. And it's interesting, he only used that term one time. I think Alice von Hildebrand or somebody got to him and said, well, don't use that word, just describe it. And in it, he describes it beautifully, the role of women in the relationship to love and how they foster and cultivate that. This is what the world needs. And I think the more people see that, the more they will understand women, and men themselves will understand women better as well. And I think that's the way to undo the general tendency of the zeitgeist to sort of put us as polar opposites rather than complementary creatures working towards the same goal, a truly human society that reflects the love, the nurturing that ought to be in every society, but sadly is not.
Very good. Great way to end the program. Thank you again, Jennifer, Colin, and Carrie, for being with us today. And we thank you for joining us, audience. And don't forget to join us next time right here on the Catholic Sphere when we bring you another topic dealing with theological issues in the Catholic Church and the culture. We'll see you then. I'm Doug Keck.